It is Thursday, the 4th of February, and obviously, my name's not Brian because he's rushing over to the studio. So, oh, looks like he just came in, so looks like he'll have to host a talk shop today.
Looking good and feeling better. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, no. Oh, hi.
What's your name?
Yeah. Better late than lucky, right? Oh, gee. Today is Thursday. First Thursday in February.
It is.
Holy Toledo. Joining us is Mr. Billy Hansel. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian.
It's amazing what the sunshine brings out in the morning, huh?
I love it. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
Trying to reacquaint myself with it.
I know. Let's take this outside, can't we?
Yeah. Normally, that kind of has a little... You don't smile when you say that, stranger.
Remember, I'm the one packing the gun. I always
That's
smile.
That's right. I kind of figured you had a built-in advantage there. All right, you turkey. Are you ready for Ever Wonder Why?
I am.
All right. Ever wonder why the mile is exactly 5,280 feet?
I've never, ever questioned that. I have no idea.
Really?
Yes. Why? Exactly.
Is that compliant?
I guess so.
Oh, okay. Unquestioning.
Yes.
In ancient Rome, land distances were measured in paces, one pace being defined as 2 steps, or about 5 feet. The largest unit of land measure used by the Romans was called a millia passum, which in Latin is 1,000 paces. Since one pace was equal to 5 feet, a millia passum was 5,000 feet. Great Britain, once part of the Roman Empire, adopted the millia passum but abbreviated it to mile. Now, the British also used another unit of land measure called the furlong.
Mm-hmm.
Horse racing?
Yes.
Okay. Now we're coming into some familiar territory for you. Okay. Which was defined as 660 feet, the approximate length of a plowed furrow in an ordinary field. The word furlong is actually a contraction, of a furrow long. The furlong was used extensively in surveying, and when it became apparent that the mile would also need to be used in surveying, it was decided that the mile should be a whole number of furlongs. Since the mile was 5,000 feet and the furlong was 660 feet, it was decided to change the mile to exactly 8 furlongs, another horse race term for you, or 5,280 feet. In 1575, Elizabeth I passed a law equating the mile exactly to this number.
Very nice. Thank you for that
So
education.
Horse racing yet again rears its ugly head, huh?
There you go.
As a reference.
Very nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Didn't
thank you.
Say anything about when plays the show, though.
It didn't. Yes.
Oh, gee. 68,000 plants in a house in Eureka?
Well, no, there was 68,000 plants in a industrial storage in Fortuna.
Well, okay, I got the number right. Furlongs, baby, furlongs.
Yes. Yes, 68,000 plants.
Were they all like Lego-sized plants, or were these... significant.
Yeah, so there were there was a part of a clone shop in this as well, which are a lot of smaller plants, but there were some mature plants in there as well, and plants in various stages of growth throughout the facility. I mean, this was a very large, obvious industrial grow, illegal, not permitted. And a lot of these storage units were intertwined. You know, they had passageways in between or doorways between the different storage
units.
Was
this the owner that was doing it, or did somebody buy it, rent a number of them, and take a sawzall and go to town?
Renting the units, absolutely. So it's definitely something that we've kept an eye on. This is a building that we have actually served search warrants on in the past. And so neighborhood complaints, those kind of things, you know, garnered another look at this. And sure enough, illegal grow was discovered, and so
it would seem 68,000. I mean, I don't know how big were the storage units. Is this like 2 or 3?
These
or
are
building.
This is not like a mini storage. This is, you know, could be light industrial storage. It could be manufacturing.
Oh,
some
the
of
metal
these metal
warehouse
buildings,
model.
Metal warehouses, okay. Absolutely. So some people use them for RV storage or equipment storage for their businesses. Other people use to grow marijuana in them.
Why be illegal other than is it difficult to get the permitting?
Exactly. That's the thing, Brian, is that this could have been a legal marijuana grow if they would have gone through the steps to get the right permits and everything in place. There are units in the county that are similar to this that have indoor growing operations that are permitted. And again,
so this wasn't a novel one. It was just an illegal one.
It's an illegal one. Absolutely. So
Yeah. Fortuna, not Eureka. Good. Okay.
Fortuna, not Eureka. Yeah. But yeah, these are kind of complaints that we love to work in the wintertime because it's something, you know, outdoor grows kind of occupy our time in the summer. And so winter, we still get the complaints. They're still, you know, growing these plants.
And you don't have to get muddy. I know.
They'll get muddy. They're close to home. It's very
convenient.
Sweet
by the way home. Yeah. Okay. But this was one that was well known to you guys.
It was, yes. Yeah, we keep an eye on it. And again, we follow up on complaints as well. As, you know, we receive, you know, hundreds of complaints a year about, you know, different problem houses, drug houses, grow houses, and those kind of things. And so, you know, we go and keep an eye on certain things. And sure enough, you know, again, when we got the complaint, did follow up, you know, and then got evidence to support they were growing there, authored a search warrant, and the judge said, you know, absolutely, go search the place. And
do you ever get judges hesitating or saying no?
If the probable cause doesn't exist or that it's light, absolutely. They say not enough. And so they do reject search warrants if there's not probable
cause. But do
you
submit them if you don't have enough?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, there's a series of reviews that do happen. You know, supervisors review. Sometimes, you know, the district attorney often reviews these reports as well and to make sure that it's a case that they believe supports it, and then we push those through. There's sometimes when, you know, the probable cause is on the lighter side, and so, but we want to see what the judge would say, you know. And
so do you submit it and go,
yep,
dunno, or do you say, you know, we're really not sure, but we're looking for your interpretation?
No, we don't come in there saying we're not sure. We just let them read the report.
Okay.
We let them read the report. The facts speak for themselves. If they're comfortable with it, they sign it. If they're not, they don't sign it. They say, we need more. So,
So it's more of a black and white decision.
Absolutely.
Than it is.
Yes.
Degrees. Not like the Planning Commission, huh?
No comment on the Planning Commission.
Well, permits, Planning Committee. Okay. Yes, okay. You see how I brought that one around?
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's
furlong. Did you hear about furlongs?
You see the sun? The sun's out today.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel. In addition to some of the surprise things, such as the Fortuna.
Surprises?
Bust, yes.
Okay.
also heard a story earlier that you agreed with somebody this week about investigations. And it's like, oh, really?
Yes.
He's an agreeing kind of guy this morning. What is this all about?
Agreement with the Department of Justice?
Yes.
Well, you know, 3 years ago, we entered into a settlement agreement with the Department of Justice regarding child abuse investigations and cross-reporting with child welfare locally. And there was a problem that was identified in 2016 and 17 where, you know, specific case relating to a tribal member and things did not get cross-reported. Child abuse complaints did not get cross-reported properly between the sheriff's office, child welfare, and so identified that issue. A complaint was made to the Department of Justice, and an investigation was done to the Department of Justice, and they identified that there were some cross-reporting issues.
So by cross-reporting, the definition is multiple agencies receiving the same information?
Yes, and so what it is we're mandated by the law to essentially, if I take a case of child abuse, that case report goes, and the facts goes to child welfare. They will then follow up on that case. If they receive a complaint through a mandated report or their own investigation, they're also supposed to cross-report it with us. So the idea here is that child abuse not only gets criminally reported, but also administratively as far as what's the welfare for the child. And so administratively removing the child, protecting the child, that's child welfare's job. Our job is to potentially remove the child, but mostly is to make sure there's criminal prosecution, you know, for someone who violates a crime or criminal statute. So it was identified, And so one of the biggest things that we had to do was do data tracking and ensure that all these reports were brought in, tracked, and investigated and cross-reported. And so there was a series of things, training, you know, community task force meetings, making a mandated reporter guide, all these series of things that, that Department of Justice wanted us to do. We did those within the first 6 months of the judgment.
So those hadn't occurred, or they hadn't occurred in this one specific instance?
Well, they thought that this is what needs to be tuned up within the county to make sure that this particular incident didn't occur again. Okay, so...
Oh, so this was used as a the starting spot.
Yes. So they identified that there was a problem with that case, and that they want to make sure it didn't happen again. So we did this series of things that, that were necessary. And like I said, within the first 6 months of the 3-year judgment, we had all those things done. And there we had to pay for an outside monitor, you know, to the tune of about $1 million, you know, over the 3 years to come in and to ensure that we were doing everything correctly. So
okay, wait a minute. $30,000 a month?
Yes.
Is there that kind of caseload for child abuse cases, or
no.
Are these guys premium priced? Like
these are
premium, nobody's business.
These are premium priced people that the Department of Justice told us essentially, these are the people that need to be your monitor, and so we're on the hook. Child welfare and the sheriff's office were on the hook to pay that bill, and to make sure that all the numbers were crunched correctly and making sure that
Whoa.
Everything was done. So you think
and
about
that's,
it.
That, that's normal. Price throughout the country that that rate?
These are you know there are these businesses.
You're appreciating
set up.
My sticker shock.
Yes,
shock on
absolutely.
This one. Yeah,
that's
okay.
What Connie Beck and I have been sticker shocked on this for years, and we've been hamstrung basically paying this bill when essentially we would love to put that $1 million into something more personnel, hiring practices.
How about a preventive prevention program?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Once
you get the blessing that okay everything's in place.
Yeah, I mean there are so many things, you know, hiring more people to do the investigations and tracking software and all those things. And so this is, you know, again, it was necessary and to do some kind of monitoring. And essentially, the Department of Justice could have done the monitoring, or you know, Health and Human Services, State Health and Human Services could have done the monitoring to make sure that we could report this. But they insisted on this outside monitor. So my frustration was within the first 6 months, we were done, and so they were just basically coming in and checking our figures, you know, every couple months, checking in with us and looking at our figures and verifying that we were doing our job. So for 3 years, you know, we've been paying this bill, being monitored and being attentive to this. In reality, we could have been focusing on other things. So when it came to December and February this month, it's up. Our settlement agreement's up. They told us in December that they wanted to continue with this into the
DOJ
next couple years. DOJ did.
Or the contractor.
No, the DOJ did. And they said they wanted us to continue with the monitoring, Sheriff's Office and Child Welfare, because there's a couple things that they believe we need to still complete in this. The Sheriff's Office, you know, we're done. Child welfare, there's just a couple small things that needed to be done, and they're in agreement that they'll continue those things, but we don't need the monitor. We don't need
to spend. It was outside the scope of the monitor?
Yes, absolutely. And so that was a bone of contention, and so I told them essentially that I was going to contest it. We were going to go to court, and I was going to contest it because we fulfilled our obligations, and we need to be released from this. And so we put forth evidence. We contested. We were going to contest it in court. They decided to drop it, you know, once we filed our motion to contest it. And
that's
so,
what is interesting, because I would think that their attorneys would be bigger and better than anything a local jurisdiction could have.
In reality,
they just came out. Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah, I guess when they were presented with the evidence, they go, yeah, we don't really have a case against the sheriff's office, so we should probably just drop this. So that's exactly what happened.
You guys complied within 6 months. Did CWS comply within 6 months?
They had much bigger issues than us. Hiring and those kind of things, they had to change a lot of their practices as well.
So the time lag was legit on their side of the ledger.
Absolutely. We had, out of like, you know, 10 things that need to be done, you know, we had a third of those that actually, you know, was our responsibility.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bear Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bear Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Hansel. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Winston reminded me during the break that our buddy Cameron Renner sold one of the big tickets last night in Ferndale.
And good for him.
Yeah. Cool for the winner, cool for
the local business.
Store, too. Yeah, because
awesome.
I know they get a little bit of a piece of the action on that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. No truth to the rumors that your officers are now going to be selling
lottery tickets
in the squad cars. Yeah.
Scratchers.
Yeah,
for sure. There is a get out of jail free option. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Good at any Monopoly game you want to play.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, what's going on now with the county and the color and the status and all that?
Yeah.
I've been talking with some buddies in other states, and they're starting to see the restaurants being open again.
Right.
And it's almost like it's at a far more accelerated pace now than what California is.
Right.
And that, if you exclude California and New York, I heard a report earlier this week that things are doing pretty good. But you wrap in what's going on here for whatever reason, and things are going sideways, whether it's misreporting in New York or Newsom doing his stuff. You just haven't heard anything in the last little bit. What kind of is the current status on this thing?
So I think a lot of the focus is getting the vaccine distribution out there, and so it's kind of the main focus. So the other stuff is kind of less in the spotlight. We are still in the purple tier. We're still in the most restrictive tier based upon our positivity rate, and so the good news is that the governor took away the stay-at-home orders, you know, from around the state, and suddenly, things overnight were different. So we suspect that the governor will be making some rule changes probably really soon about, you know, changing the tier systems again or the requirements, because, we see things are getting a little bit better around the state. And, you know, maybe they'll start looking at the science aspect of things. And, you know, is COVID really being transmitted within restaurants? And, you know, maybe that should be, you know, one of the first things that they open back up
or
again
retail,
to reduce
or
I reduce mean, capacity.
It,
right. So
it seems like the panic is not there now. I mean, there's still concern, obviously, with the different mutations that are going on. You know, I suppose you could lock down the economy. Who was it said lock it? Oh, Gates. Lock it down for 6 months?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But, I'm sure.
I mean, it's been encouraging for me, though, to hear that the economic component is at least being recognized.
Yeah.
Rather than having to be confrontational with the medical guys. But, are there two different tracks that are running? Because I would think that would be the most logical approach.
Yeah. Well, you know, what matters today, right? What matters today with the governor is essentially what's going to drive this bus. And so I think, you know, just personally, you know, I think there's a lot of things that do need to be changed. You know, we do have some positivity that's increased positivity here in Humboldt County. But when you look at the overall numbers, you know, 2,000 some odd positives within a county, and we've been doing this for close to a year now.
How many tests?
65,000 tests. You know, some people
get tested. About 2% of those that are testing positive.
Yes.
And then of those, how many end up in the hospital?
111 is it, and we've had 30 deaths. So when you look at overall hospitalizations and deaths, you know, it really is a very small number. Absolutely, it's tragic when anyone dies, but we had, you know, some of those deaths had, you know, were people that were going to die anyway, that had the do not resuscitate
frail
things.
Elderly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So even if, you know, they wanted to get treatment, you know, they some of those people could have survived COVID, you know, and then died from other things. So definitely underlying conditions and those kind of things are taken out, you know, those people. That,
sounds to me like somebody's starting to pay attention to what the numbers really are saying rather than just throwing numbers out and going with raw numbers. So is that fact starting to change the culture now inside of the wherever it is where the determinations are made, and when you're looking at the numbers for Humboldt County, these various elements and aspects are taken into consideration?
I think so. You know, we don't have a whole lot of control of what the state says. They look at our numbers every week and they say whether or not we're eligible to, you know, go to a lower tier.
So you really still don't have.
We don't have local control over that. No, we can't determine the color we're in. We can advocate if we believe that we should be in a higher, you know, or, you know, if we're hovering, you know, actually, we can only advocate to be more restrictive than less restrictive. Okay, so we can't advocate to go into red right now. But,
is there anybody in the state that's not grape?
Yes. So Trinity County is in orange. So they're, you know, went through red and now they're in orange. So they have more, you know, stores that open up for capacity and that kind of stuff. Restaurants are open in Trinity County.
Well, lack of tourism. Yeah. Yeah. You're dealing with 15,000 people.
Right.
And that's it.
Yes.
Well, gee.
So what we're seeing, too, is because people are talking about the vaccine, less people are getting tested now. And so our numbers are kind of down. I think we had, 10 or 12 yesterday as far as positive. And, you know, people are focusing on getting that vaccine. And when you look at our numbers, too, in our demographic, Brian, you're looking at the 20 to 40-year-olds are the ones that are spreading coronavirus right now. So, and those are the population that's the healthiest and that aren't being, you know, mostly hospitalized or dying from COVID.
But they're just the incubators.
They're the incubators and spreading it around and those kind of things. So, so I'm happy to say that, you know, we've had, I think, close to 19,000 vaccinations within the county. Some of those are first doses. Most of those are first doses, and we have some second doses coming on board now. So we're getting through the vaccinations, you know, pretty quickly now.
So as that goes through, other than somebody having the personal relief, if there was concern, does that change anything significantly? I mean you still have to go through the test. Well, if you have less people taking the test because they've had the shots, well, okay. So then those that get sick, you represent a higher percentage, and that whips it right back
up on a
percentage basis.
Yes, on, you know, the positivity rate. But still, if we have, you know, a rate that's low, you know, per 100,000, what they, you know, is
population
is what they're looking
or
test? No, population. So they go over, not the test, the tests, you know, if you have a lot of tests, basically our positivity rate based upon the tests could lower our number more. And that's what happened in the past because we've had lots of tests out there. But as we see people that are doing tests less, then we don't get that luxury of getting that bounced, you know, downward. So
KINS, news and information time, follow the bouncing ball. It's
exactly.
8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Hansel. So Oregon, with the legalization as of Monday, you're shaking your head going, oh, gosh. what do you think the impact is going to be here? Are we going to see it coming through, activity coming through? Like Steve Watson on Monday said, yeah, it's going to change. Not really sure what, but things are going to change. You know, the fact that meth and heroin and LSD are now legally available in the state of Oregon, that's got to put a shiver through any of the bordering counties.
Well, the deal is that Oregon has
Use deal with drugs.
Come no, on, this dude. Is the this is the drug deal. This is a deal with Oregon is that they've been a they've had a big demand for drugs. Obviously, meth, heroin. Has been in demand in Oregon for a very long time, and we have been kind of a funnel for that, and it comes through Humboldt County, and on its way to Oregon, because the I-5 corridor is essentially there's a lot of enforcement going on there, so all these drugs, most of these drugs are coming from Mexico. And all the elements
just coming up 101, the
coming
whole way,
up I-5, you know, cutting over 101 and that kind of stuff. So, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pounds are going through there. So what do we see? We see society going to have a very difficult time up in Oregon because if there's no consequences for these kind of activity, then people, this kind of activity is going to...
As pretty as it is, it's still going to be anarchy.
It is going... Yeah, exactly. And so what drugs, you know, will do to these people is irreversible harm. And then they become a product of the system. And
wards
then their children become even more. So we're talking about, you know, that influence here in Humboldt County. Yeah, that's good. We're going to see that, you know.
More action as it's going up or more impact in the region for either services or people that are off?
I think you're going to see – you're going to see both, right? But I think people are going to come to California trying to receive services – because of the things that we offer here, as opposed to Oregon not doing it. And we're so darn close that we're going to be that.
So you see Delaware County really getting drilled in Siskiyou County and all the border counties.
Yes. So.
Well, hopefully you're all wrong.
I wish I was.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
See
everybody tomorrow.